Well, it's Thursday, or nearly so. I'm going to go ahead and I might actually put this into the fold a little bit early, recording this on Wednesday night. We have Chapter 9 coming up with Epiphany. A couple of notes before we get started here. We had a little bit of bad news over this last week. A good friend of mine, or a friend of mine, I should say, from high school, Glenn Lundgren, had passed away. He was only 62 years old, same as me. He's was one of those truly nice guys, and was because of him that there's some of the characters that appear in my stories came about. Well, I wouldn't say because of him. He was just happened to be there. More specifically, Reverend Kello, who was the pastor of the church Dan's pastoring before Dan had it. The story of Reverend Kello is actually back into the Magnolia Chronicles. Also, lets a little bit of know why the change in the guard for them. Also, also mentioned in there is a fellow from my first book, Reverend Murphy. That Glenn and I had some a chance to meet the person behind the person, so to speak. I put some kind words about him on an ongoing blog that I have on bdherrellauthor.com. It's a blogspot type of thing. May want to go over there, have a look, and see some stuff, some background stuff about me. Taking into what's led me into being the mad author that I am right now. Right now, it's Chapter 9. Let's give a quick break and we'll get right into it. Epiphany, Chapter 9. The shotgun seat of the FBI agent's government-issued Dodge was quite a bit more comfortable than the back seat of the deputy sheriff's Tahoe. At least so Dan Stevens imagined. That crazy sheriff had in mind to have you handcuffed, the G-man remarked. From the information I was able to get from our man Barada in Ohio, I didn't think that you would be that much of a danger. You could have let me drive my own car, you know, Dan protested. Your riding with me is a compromise. Dan considered not having handcuffs as a blessing. He spent the rest of his trip into town without saying a word. Sheriff George Pinkerman was found at the smoldering ruins of Davis First Baptist, talking with what Dan presumed is the head of the fire department. The G-man led Dan to the sheriff. The lawman dismissed the fireman, then turned his attention to the pastor. "So, Jimmy, this here's the fellow what burned down the church, right?" The sheriff talked as if he had a disdain for the G-man. Dan wondered if it may have had something to do with the color of Jimmy's skin. "That's James, and yes, this is the person you suspect may have had something to do with the church burning down." James got right up in the sheriff's face. "What you need to know, Sheriff, is that this man's considered innocent until he can be proved guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Got that, boy?" The sheriff's face turned 50 shades of red. "Your suspect and I will take a look around while you're adjusting your attitude, Mr. Pinkerman," James declared, walking away. "Come on, Daniel, let's have a look around." Dan followed James around the perimeter of the still-smoking building. Every few feet, James would stop, examine something, smell the air, then continue on. "The fire was started here," he declared, "at a point where the front door used to be." He held out his arm, wavered a little bit, then pointed toward the center of the charred mass. "It was arson. The arsonist lit the fire here at the entrance. He left a gasoline trail down toward the center of the church in what was most likely the pastor's study. Our investigators will probably find a cache of explosives or accelerants which ignited similar trails throughout the rest of the church." "My pastor's study overlooked the parking lot of my church," Dan informed James. "The fire marshal mentioned that there were multiple flashpoints there as well." "Ex-army," James grunted. "It's one of several techniques we use when destroying a building. You aren't army. You didn't do it." James continued his inspection around the perimeter of the burnt-out church, dodging firefighters attending to hot spots. Our suspect came in here, James said, when they were almost all the way around the building. He exited the same way, then set fire to the building from the outside. From the looks of it, he turned off the gas before he set the fire. Dan's attention turned to a gas meter less than 20 feet away. Had walked right past it, him not noticing. He walked back over to the meter, saw that the main supply line was turned to the off position, then walked back over to James. "How did I miss that?" Dan asked on his return. "You just did. No big deal," he was told. They finished their circuit. Sheriff Pinkerman listened politely to what James had to say, but that was about it. He was obviously upset at having to interact with a man of color. "I'm taking your suspect to breakfast, if you don't mind," James concluded. Before the sheriff could protest, James and Dan were in the G-Man's car, headed back toward the cabin. They stopped 3 blocks away from the church at a small diner tucked just off of the main drag. The place reminded Dan of Zeke's Cafe back in Magnolia, a throwback to a simpler time where men could gather in the morning before heading off to work. "Agent Abner, it's been a while," a man coming out of the kitchen and wearing an apron approached the pair just after they sat down at a small table. There was a round of acknowledgement in the room. Obviously, James had been there a time or two before. The man in the apron took their orders after serving them coffee. "Andy Cremens runs this place," James remarked while they were waiting on their meal. "Wish my job brought me here a little more often. Breakfast is to die for." "Makes up for the sheriff's attitude, I suppose," Dan smiled, taking a sip of coffee. "He's a throwback. He's not a bad man, just a little backwards about some things. My boss loves to send me here just to rub my presence in his face." "Your ex-army?" Dan asked. "Military police. Retired. Joined the bureau the day after I mustered out." James reached for a napkin to detach a bit of coffee he'd spilled on the table. "Tell me something about you," James continued. "I hear you were a football star and hell on wheels when you were in school." "My fame spreads further than I thought it would. Who tipped you off?" Dan said. "Barada did. He told me about the relationship you have with the chief of police there in Ohio. I called Barada before I came out with a deputy to pick you up. According to him, you have a wife, 4 kids, and a church you're keeping up with. I always heard that the Lord works in mysterious ways." "Well, I feel flattered, but at the same time, I'm more than just a little concerned," Dan said, moving closer to the G-Man. "It's almost as if there's a dossier on me out there." "Well, truthfully, yes, there is," James confirmed. "We share little bits of information now and then about people of interest. Barada told me to look out for you when you were here. He sent over your dossier, and I read it. He suspects there is some sort of connection between you and the fire back in Ohio. The fact that you're here when there's another church fire has raised an eyebrow or two." "Another church fire?" Dan was puzzled. "Remember what I was telling you about when we walked around the church?" Dan nodded his head. "It's just like I told you. It was done by, or looks like it was done by, someone who'd been in the army. According to the information I have, you don't have the background to have set the fire the way it was set. There's a specialist in this sort of thing coming up from D.C. this morning to confirm it. In the meantime, the jackass with a sheriff's uniform needs assurance that I'm keeping a close eye on his number one suspect." "But he doesn't trust you," Dan said. "He doesn't trust you either, but he's afraid to cross me for fear of losing his job. It's complicated. It's an elaborate dance, that's all. Once my expert comes in, you'll be in the clear." "Let's hope so," Dan mumbled. "It'll be all right," James assured him. "I'll see that some of the pressure's taken off. My daddy was a pastor. I know what it can do to a man." "So you understand?" "Daddy said that there are times when he felt like he was getting fired on from all sides," James explained. "Nothing he could do or say would please everyone. He is filled with doubts, beset with depression and in need of prayer almost all the time. There are times when he doubted the existence of God. When he lost his faith in God, in humanity, even himself. Mama would beg him to go away, get lost for a while, take time off. He never did. My daddy died at the age of 55 of a heart attack caused by the stress he endured by being a preacher. He was a good man, Daniel Stevens, just like you." A good man. What if I snapped? Dan speculated. What if somehow I did manage to burn down my own church and Pastor Gooding's for good measure? It's within the realm of possibility, Pastor, James replied, but not very likely. Like I just told you, you don't have the background to have set this fire, at least the way it was set. Doubt started to creep back into the back of Dan's mind. While James tried to lighten the mood by talking about the history of the area, Dan looked listlessly out the front window of the restaurant, watching and wondering if life as he knew it was coming to an end. It came in a flash, then it disappeared. Dan sat bolt upright and urged James to twist around to look out the window. What is it? The G-man asked. I saw him. That guy. He was at breakfast at the lodge yesterday morning. He just went by. I saw him. James signaled the owner to let him know to hold their breakfasts until they returned. The pair went out the front door to look up and down the street, only to find there was no one around. He was here just a moment ago. He was here in the front of the restaurant. There was no one there. James did a quick sweep of the area looking for signs of Dan's sighting. Well, if there was someone here, he left in a mighty big hurry, James declared. Look here. James picked up a still smoldering cigarette butt and showed it to Dan. Do you see where he might have gone? Did you get a good look at him? James asked. No and no, Dan stated. I saw him yesterday morning at the dining room at the lodge. At least I caught a glimpse of his face. But he hid, as if he didn't want to be seen, especially by me. Can you describe him? James pulled a notebook out of his shirt pocket. Male, white, maybe late 20s, early 30s, 6 foot maybe, 175. If I brought a sketch artist, could you recall enough details so we could get a good idea what this man of yours looks like? Dan nodded. Maybe, he said. I don't think I'd be very helpful, though. You might be more help than you know. Let me get back to your cabin and give you some background, Agent Hamner told his guest. There have been a string of church burnings in this general area for over a year now. If you can help us to identify a suspect, you might be doing a lot of people a whole lot of good. So ends Chapter 9. Chapter 10 is going to be coming up next week. I am in the process of doing some rewrites on parts of the story. I don't think I've caught up with Chapter 10 quite yet, so we're looking forward to having a good time with it. In the meantime, it's been a big joy in here. Don't take any nickels, and we'll see you out there.